plate a potential nugget.
You've been on this journey for a decade plus now, Ashish. And if you had to sort of maybe juxtapose your growth in this phase versus your professional growth in Chris Capital, in setting up and scaling up Chris Capital, maybe with a specific reference to leaders who are at that transition where they're moving from a successful corporate career to the social impact world, any pieces that took you by surprise in this journey in the last 10 years? What are some of the things that you probably didn't anticipate? And what would your perspective be for leaders who are at the transition point?
Yeah, I think it's a very interesting question, Deepak. And some of this, obviously, I learned with hindsight. I had my own naive assumptions when I went in. One is that, you know, as corporate people, particularly, I had about 20 years of investing under my belt. I've looked at lots of companies, a lot of industries. There's a little bit of this naive assumption that I can figure out this one pretty quickly. I'll read some stuff, I'll talk to some people, and I'll be able to synthesize it and come up with something different and put it out there that this is what needs to get done. And almost be able to start preaching to folks quickly. And, you know, I think in the social sector, the production function is very complex. I mean, the number of stakeholders you have, including the involvement of the government, the layers through which the whole education process gets transacted, you need an understanding of many things before you actually can make these comments. You need to read the evidence, the literature, which is more in the academic world. You need to understand sort of the content, which is curriculum, and look at curricula experts and instructional design. You need to understand pedagogy and how that works. You need to understand the system. How does government work? You need to understand money and what role the budgets play and things like that. And then, you know, over time, and understand the data, what data is out there, what's valid, what's not. And understand, you know, how does this system change actually work? Because it's a very complex function. To improve India's education system in one state, say Maharashtra, I think is much more complicated than running TCS, for instance. By the way, it's almost similar number of employees, in about 500,000 in each of those. But I think it's far more complicated to figure out how. And it would be naive. I mean, it's naive to come in with 2 months of understanding and try to go to the CEO of TCS and say, here's how you should run your company. It would be doubly naive to do that, you know, with the actors in education.
And what drives that delta complexity?
I think it's the fact that there are so many. One is, it's a very complex production function. You know, how you educate a child is very complicated. I mean, there are home effects, and so you have to look at how you can improve home effects and what role the parent is going to play. We don't think about it in our homes because we sort of naturally, most of us, play that role. But with a low-income, less literate parent who has many other demands of their time and is dealing with the vagaries and vicissitudes of life, you know, what role should they play? What is positive parenting? How should they get involved with the education? You know, it's very, very complicated in figuring that out. How do you motivate a frontline government employee, change their belief system? How do you motivate them? There are 500,000 of them in Maharashtra, right? Teachers. And what tools do you give them to succeed? You have data in the system, and there's a natural tendency to inflate the data. It's a public system. How do you truth score admin data and improve it? You know, so that systemically you have better data coming out and make the assessments more low stake. How do you get people to start using data in this very complex system? You know, how do you get the middle management sort of retooled so it can play an important role in actually coaching, providing feedback, collecting more authentic data from what it's doing today? So that whole change management, you know, how do you do it within a public system? How do you get the political commitment? Because till you don't have the chief minister of a state behind it, you know, bureaucrats will keep changing. And you know, you'll work for 2 years and then your work will be done. And how do you get not only the political commitment from the top, but deeper commitment? How do you get the top 400-500 people to sort of buy in and want the reform? So system change, I think, in the public system is much harder because you don't have the levers of control that you have, and neither do you have the capacity. You don't have a large HR department in the Maharashtra school system, right, to tell you how you're going to do, motivate employees and what tools you're going to provide them. You're sort of flying with a different sort of system of middle management, etc. So I think changing government and improving systems is hard because there is much greater inertia. The incentives are very, very different. And I think figuring that out is a big challenge if you've come from the corporate world where you're used to having the levers of control. The joystick is in your hand. And, you know, you come in naturally with all guns blazing with ideas. You also have a tendency to want to move quickly and, you know, have this. I mean, I remember coming in. And so I think one big mistake people who transition is, my advice would be sort of read a lot, listen, sparingly give advice in the first year, okay? Be more in learning mode. And look to unlearn certain things and learn lots of new things. Because it's so complex, you need to really spend a lot of time deeply understanding it before you jump to conclusions. A second one, I think, would be you need a different sort of degree of humility, I think, working in the social sector. I think one is, you know, when you're selling a product to an individual, of course, you need to understand the customer. But here with the sort of beneficiary, I think you really need to go a little bit deeper to understand the beneficiary, what goes on in their home. And you're not just selling them a product, you're trying to change their life or their child's life. So I think having that empathy, but also being able to deal with a variety of different people. Most people in the NGO sector are not corporate types. They're not driven by money. They're here on a mission. They think a little bit differently. And I think attuning yourself to being able to work with them, I think it's critical. I think if one wears too much of that corporate badge or too much corporate lingo, you know, upfront, you piss off a lot of people. I think so learning how to deal with the sector, I think is very, and respecting some of the people. I mean, these are people who've given up. They also went to IIM. They've given up, you know, 20 years of making money to do what they do. They're smart. They've learned a lot. I mean, they may think differently. They may behave differently. They may not have certain parts of the management toolkit you do. But for a moment, you know, learn how to build an empathetic relationship with them and see the positives that they have versus starting to question what they don't have in their toolkit. I think the third is, I think, learning to work with government. You know, I think when you're in the corporate world, you are just lobbying for your taxes to be lower or, you know, duties to be higher in your industry or just whatever you want to get done. It's that transactional relationship, and government anyway keeps you at bay as best as possible. I think when you're working in the development sector and you really want to work on system change, you have to work much more deeply with government. So understanding how do you build trust with government that you're not a transactional player, you're not just there to give them advice. But firstly, when you give advice, there's no bias, that you're truly looking out for the interests of the children and the system. And two, is you're willing to stay the course with them. You're not just a transactional player. You're actually going to help them, work with them, and eventually let them make the decisions because we're there just to support. So we're not looking to take the credit away. We're not looking for glory. And I think that part of dealing with government in that manner is something at least I had not been exposed to, you know, in the corporate world at all. So I think there are a bunch of things you need to do differently if you want to be successful here.
Got it. Maybe coming to you specifically, Ashish, you spoke about learning and unlearning. And if you had to really highlight the couple of things that you had to unlearn, you spoke about control and having the joystick. I think that point is well taken. Any other headline themes around what you had to unlearn and also the one or two muscles that got built in the last 10 years that you didn't have earlier?
Yeah, I think the things I had to unlearn were, you know, one is that this lingo part, right, that I had to hold back on that there is maybe a development management is slightly different from corporate management. Mm-hmm. And you have to keep that in the back of your mind. And so, yes, sort of 60-70% transfers, but I think being acutely aware of what doesn't transfer, I think, is very important. I think how you recruit people is very, very different because motivations are very, very different in this sector. And then how you manage them and get the best out of them, I think, is different because the incentives that they respond to are very different. It's not money, it's something else. And of course, because there isn't money, I think people are very passionate, also therefore more opinionated and much more, sometimes more rigid. So how do you deal with that? Learn how to, I think the people management side is very complicated in the nonprofit sector because everything from recruitment to talent management to performance management, it needs to be done somewhat differently and carefully and delicately. Same is true in a university, by the way. And then I think the measurement is very, very hard. I think, you know, we're just used to, I think the corporate world makes it very simple with P&L and balance sheet and, you know, profitability and growth and ROE and ROC and all of that. I think there's no one single metric that cuts across the development sector. Each one will have its own set of metrics. There is a certain theory of change, but, you know, looking at what the most important outcomes are, how you'll measure it. Measuring is also not so easy. It's not like the data is just given to you on a platter. And then what are the sort of building blocks, the intermediate outcomes, and then the early lead indicators. And having that framework sort of clear and being able, how do you get the data in a way such that it's reliable? So this whole measurement and evaluation, both in real time for feedback, but eventually evaluation to know whether something's working or not, is very, very different from the corporate world. Hmm. And I think one needs to sort of look at that. I think the other thing that's different is, you know, I mean, marketing in the corporate world is to sell your product. I mean, here you're trying to, you know, you're providing a service to beneficiaries. So it's very, very different in terms of, I think, where you're doing your marketing is more around fundraising. And fundraising is, again, different because you're trying to push buttons where you get people to emotively connect with an issue, which is, again, different from the way you do it, I think, in the corporate world. And to convince them where sometimes it's 0% sort of share of wallet to make it 2% or something like that. And so I think it's a very complicated sale process and it takes time. It's got a long lead cycle, if I were to describe it in corporate terms. Hmm. And it's one that has to be very personalized and contextualized to the individual. So I think in those ways, it's so different. So you just have to unlearn the way you do it in the corporate world and figure out the context here is very, very different. And so therefore, how you influence government, you know, is very, very different here. So I think unlearning how you did in the corporate world and then learning a lot, I think the learning trajectory, and that's what excited me, as I told you. The principal reason to have a second career was just you're off on a new trajectory. And I think that's very much true. Whether you do your own thing or you transition as a corporate person full-time to working in a job in the social sector, or even if you do it part-time, I think one has to sort of think acutely about this, you know, what's different and therefore tune oneself a little bit differently.
My journey with philanthropy is relatively recent. I'm associated with Social Venture Partners, a group of philanthropists who want to set aside a small financial sum and about 5 to 10% of their time to make a difference to not-for-profit organizations. Through SVP, I've been introduced to Antarang Foundation and I've worked with them over the last 4+ years, and it's made a profound difference to me. It's also exposed me to the intractable challenges and the complexities involved in solving some of these issues. Working with SVP, it's been a great opportunity to work with like-minded individuals and build an appreciation of this space before taking any big calls in terms of committing to an organization. If you wish to know more about Social Venture Partners, please feel free to reach me on my email, deepak.jayaraman@transitioninsight.com. It's deepak.jayaraman@transitioninsight.com.